You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Anthony Amore. He's the director and security and chief investigator at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, where he's charged with the ongoing efforts to recover 13 works of art stolen from the museum on March the 18th, 1990. He's also the co-author of Stealing Rembrandts and the author of The Art of the Con. His latest book, The Woman Who Stole Vermeer, is about the extraordinary life and crimes of heiress-turned-revolutionary Rose Dugdale, who in 1974 became the only woman to pull off a major art heist. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you very much for joining us. So tell me first of all about your job. It sounds fascinating.
Fascinating is one way to put it. frustrating is another. You know, I've been looking for these stolen masterpieces for 16 years now, and along the way I've recovered a bunch of other paintings, but we're yet to recover the works that I'm charged with finding, the 13 pieces stolen from the Gardner 31 years ago.
Gosh, so I mean, it's just mind-boggling to imagine what that would entail on a daily basis for all these years. I mean, how do you begin to? I mean, you're doing the job that presumably the police should have done when they were stolen initially.
Well, I work alongside an FBI agent who's a partner of mine, and we do this together. But I'd say that's a great segue. You know, how do you go about doing this? Well, the way I have gone about doing it is researching other art thefts and trying to, among other approaches, but looking at other art crimes, major thefts, and seeing what becomes of these paintings when they're stolen, and what, you know, the motives and the outcomes, and, you know, even just in terms of how far from the location are they located, all kinds of data, anything that will help us in recovering the Gardner paintings.
Mm. And do you feel like you've come close over the years? Did you ever think at any point, I think we've cracked it, or has it not been that, like that?
No, there have been plenty of moments, and my partner from the FBI, Jeff Kelly, and I believe we know who did it. We haven't announced who to the public, but I'd say the problem with looking for stolen art is that knowing who did it is not what gets you over the goal line. Stolen paintings sit where they are until you go and get them. So, you know, it's the truest thing, you know, there's close is only good in horseshoes. It's not a matter of how close we are. It's a matter of just getting them and putting them back on the wall.
Yeah. And having a strong idea of who you think, I guess, is different to having concrete proof of who you think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about looking for a stolen painting, as I mentioned, they just sit there and wait until you recover them, right? If you're looking for a fugitive, a person, they have to go out, they have to go to the doctor, and they have to get food and those sorts of things, but paintings don't. They just sit there. So until you get in that room and behind that wall or in that crawl space, it remains missing. So it is especially difficult challenge.
Yeah. So tell us about Rose Dugdale. What did she do in 1974?
Well, what drew me to Rose was doing all this research into big art heists. And, you know, people would ask me during lectures and such, you know, has a woman ever done this? And generally speaking, no, it's men who do all the awful crimes. But there's always an outlier. And Rose is that attractive outlier to me. And I researched her life and I found that, you know, she had stolen this Vermeer and 18 other works from the Rusborough House in Ireland. And what makes it fascinating to me is she's not just an outlier because she's a female pulling off this heist, but because her motives are different than virtually every other art theft. She had political motives. She had stolen these paintings and she chose from the Rusborough collection very well. Only she could have done this. The thugs that she brought with her wouldn't know these paintings. And she did it to try to get the Price sisters, who were on a hunger strike, moved from England to Northern Ireland to serve their prison sentence.
Wow. Because she was born into extreme wealth, wasn't she? She was had a good education and not the kind of typical person to be involved in theft.
No, you know, nothing about Rose is typical. That's what made the story so much, frankly, fun to write. She, you know, everything about her was spectacular. She was a debutante, but didn't want to be one, but it was the last class that went before Queen Elizabeth, 1958. So her parents had to negotiate with her, and the bargain was they'd allow her to attend Oxford, which she did. And that's such a sign of the times, right? I mean, if my daughters approached me and they wanted to go to Oxford, I'd cross hell or high water to make it happen. But in her time, in the late 50s, it was something parents had to acquiesce to. She is someone who gave up this extreme wealth you mentioned because she was such a fervent believer in her cause. And I think she's interesting because you don't have to agree with her cause or her motives to give her at least grudging admiration in terms of her earnestness in pursuing her means.
Mm. And what were her motives then?
Her motives were strictly Irish republicanism. So at first she was a woman of the people. When she had returned from Cuba in 1968 after experiencing Castro's revolution in person along with a large number of students, she sold her Tony apartment in Chelsea and opened a tenants union in Tottenham and quickly became known as the Angel of Tottenham because she was giving away her wealth to people who needed it, and including people who were, you know, might not actually have needed it, but she was just incredibly generous. She was a fierce fighter on behalf of the needy and the downtrodden. She was a virulent anti-capitalist. But then after an arrest for another art theft, she went to Ireland, where she had already been suspected of running guns to Ireland, because, you know, this was right at the burgeoning of the Irish civil rights movement, 1969. And she went there and within months orchestrated an aerial assault on a police station attempting to drop bombs on a constabulary. I mean, this was someone who dedicated the rest of her life to Irish republicanism.
It's bizarre, isn't it, how she went from being a really nice, kind, generous person to dropping bombs? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, when you listen to her interview, she says, you know, at a certain point, she realized that she might have to kill people for the greater good. And it's really sometimes you hear something like that and you move on. But when you stop and think that someone's made that decision. And when she dropped these bombs, nobody was harmed. It was a failed attempt. But if she had been successful, she would have killed dozens of people. It would have been a massacre. It's a harrowing story.
So why do we know why she particularly targeted Rusborough House in Ireland and why she chose these specific paintings?
It's a very interesting question. I'm glad you asked it. She was one of the few people who was aware of that sort of thing. Now, one of the best anecdotes in the book is when the detectives from the Garda are on their way to Rustboro House when they hear there's been a theft. One of them radios back to headquarters to his superiors and said, there may be $1 million worth of paintings stolen here. And his superior replies, don't be ridiculous. There aren't $1 million worth of paintings in all of Ireland. I mean, nobody knew really what was in this house, but Rose had the education and the upbringing to know that Sir Alfred Beit would have, an heir to the De Beers fortune had this collection in his home. She was of the pedigree who would understand these fine European homes. I really feel like she's the only one who could have pulled off this heist when she did. It wasn't until 12 years later that someone else robbed the Rustboro House again, inspired by what Rose had taken. In fact, they took the same paintings, essentially, that Rose took.
Gosh, so she took a painting by Goya, Gainsborough, Rubens, and Vermeer. Was that what she took, four or more than that?
She took 19, and they were all of that quality. I believe it was two Rubens, Franz Hall as well. But she knew, she would know these works, whereas other thieves might not recognize such artists. She knew. In fact, even when you look at the heist at the Garda Museum that I investigate, where they took Rembrandt and Vermeer, in the same room they took the Rembrandt and Vermeer, they left behind a Van Dyck and a Rubens, probably not knowing who Van Dyck or Rubens were.
Yeah.
But Rose would know.
So what happened after that? How was she identified as the person who took them?
You know, because of her prior crimes, the police were already had their eye out for her. And when they learned that a woman had pulled off this heist, they were had a pretty good sense it was her. Now, she was smart in terms of targets, but not smart as a criminal. So she and her cohorts disappeared into West Cork, thinking that if they go to an isolated place out of the way, they wouldn't be found. When in fact, when outsiders go to places like that, the people who live there quickly recognize them. So it didn't take long for the police to get word that Rose was in West Cork. And she was quickly arrested and charged, and at court famously pled proudly and incorruptibly guilty, went to prison. And I maintain in the book that this was something she wanted. I think she really felt like she needed to go to prison to get her bona fides as a true revolutionary.
And how long was she in prison for?
She served 6 years of an 8-year sentence. When she was released, she went and to this day works for Sinn Féin as in education. She's older now. She's 80 years old, but she's still loved and admired in the Republican community, which wasn't necessarily the case in her heyday. People were skeptical of her. They thought maybe it was just this rich girl having fun at the Republican expense. But no, she's never left Dublin, and she's still there and very well admired.
Gosh, what an interesting story. So does she know of your book?
She does. I attempted to get an interview with her and it fell through. And I believe it is because in recent years, Irish Republicans who were involved in the movement at the time had done interviews that they were guaranteed would be confidential and then came to light. So I think she was scared off by the prospect of speaking publicly.
Right. Oh, what a shame. But you were very excited at the prospect of being able to speak to her.
I was, but when you're writing a book like this and you don't have the cooperation, that's why my book is 275 pages with 600 footnotes. It is very thoroughly vetted. And yeah. Her boyfriend at the time, Walter Heaton, has read it and said it's a true representation of facts. So I'm proud of the outcome.
Oh, great. Yes, well done. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called The Woman Who Stole Vermeer. It's available on our website. It's the story of Rose Dugdale, and it's by Anthony Amore, who we've been chatting to today. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us.
And what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.